I'm Matthew Petty and this is Intersection. Orange and Osceola County Public Defender Robert Wesley says more kids aged 5 to 10 are being arrested in his jurisdiction than any other county in Florida, and he says a lot of those arrests are happening in schools. Wesley says troubled kids are being turned over to school resource officers, sheriff's deputies or police officers, rather than to counsellors or psychologists. A new law takes effect October 1st, which expands the civil citation program. That will give school resource officers more discretion to issue warnings or civil citations. But in the meantime, Wesley says parents in his jurisdiction should be asking questions about that high arrest rate for kids aged 5 to 10. Joining me to talk about the issue, Robert Wesley, welcome to Intersection.
Thank you very much.
And also in the studio, we have Osceola County School Board member Calvin Soto. Calvin, thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
And joining us by phone, Orange County School Board member Linda Cobert. Linda, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Robert Wesley, I'd like to start with you. How many of these arrests actually are happening in schools?
Well, I don't know the exact number. What we did look at, though, is the is debunking the belief that we once had that the majority of arrests happen in the summertime and during the Christmas break.
Now, why would that be a belief?
Like what? At one time, that was our practice. We saw more kids arrested when they're out of school than when they're in school. And that shifted within the last decade or so, that really our active times are when school is in session, and we have far fewer arrests when school's out and during the two-week winter break in, in December. So we've seen this nationwide. We've seen the increase in school arrest, and we think that there are some reasons for it. But what we're significantly worried about is what's often known as the school-to-prison pipeline problem. Mm-hmm. That is, when kids are identified as criminal, when they're pointed out as being problematic, when they're arrested at an early age, kids tend to not forego the bad behavior, but seem to tend to embrace it. And so we're worried about how we're treating kids that are students in school one day and then seen as enemies of the state a few years later.
Mm-hmm. So, Robert Wesley, what are these kids being arrested for?
Well, there's a number of crimes and things that didn't exist when I was in school, such as disruption of a school function, essentially disorderly conduct type charges, and these are a large measure. The concern is that in our jurisdiction, it looks like about a third of the arrests are for disorderly conduct type offenses. Whereas in Miami-Dade, which has twice our student population, had that jurisdiction had four children arrested the last measurable year for disorderly conduct.
Now, when you say children, you're talking about a specific age range? Like, what age are we talking here?
Sure. You're talking about first graders through 18-year-olds. Those are the people who are subject to the jurisdiction of juvenile court. But as we go through this process, we remember that we were taught in law school that there's an age under which children are presumed to be incapable.
Right. I mean, first grade, that's something that requires a little bit of mental pause. Like, what's going on?
Well, To avoid the shock value, the Department of Juvenile Justice created the category of arrest of age group 5 to 10. It was not our metric. We didn't choose those parameters. And everything we've relied on when we talk here today is an actual online statistic of the Department of Juvenile Justice on their website. They chose the 5 to 10-year-old group. It's still shocking even to think about a 10-year-old being arrested, I think,
sure,
for most of us to think about mid-elementary term kids being arrested.
Just for clarification, too, we did reach out to the sheriff's offices in Orange and Osceola counties. We also reached out to the Orlando Police Department to ask about arrests in schools. Orlando Police declined to comment, and we're unable to get comment from Orange and Osceola sheriff's offices. But Robert Wesley, what happens? Like, what's the process when a kid is arrested at school? Is it like when an adult is arrested? Are there handcuffs? What happens?
Well, the person is taken in custody and they're told they're being arrested. You know, in the 1960s, the Supreme Court told us that children had the same constitutional rights as adults, that every one of the Bill of Rights that obtain to an adult are applicable to the prosecution of a child. So they have every measure of, they're entitled to every measure and safeguard. Whether this sits well with parents or other people in the community doesn't matter. It's the law of the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. And so when a child is taken into custody, we believe that is a traumatic event. And we're fearful that that event becomes a life-turning event that makes them say, now that that's happened to me, there's nowhere to go but down. I'll be arrested again. Mm-hmm. The So when we see this with the group of age 5 to 10, it's problematic because by definition, those are students. Those are school-age kids, and they're not being arrested at the pool hall, at the bank, and daily commerce.
Mm-hmm. Calvin Soto, what's your sense of what's going on here? Were you aware that this was an issue in Osceola County before it was brought up by Mr. Wesley?
Absolutely. A lot of what I think everything that he just mentioned, it's nothing new. It's something that, you know, these are issues that have been ongoing. There's been a lot of reports and a lot of research looking into what are the causes. But right now what we have is it's really the result of a lot of zero-tolerance policies that school districts have to adopt, mm-hmm. and how individuals in our school district, our instructional staff, make their judgment calls. And so, you know, when you put those dynamics together, easy access to law enforcement, instructional staff that are trained to follow a certain matrix, and individual judgment may be discouraged by certain personnel, you have this result. Mm-hmm. And so it's something that every school board member will be aware of quite easily when they look at the data and when they sit in expulsion hearings and try to peel the layers and see what's going on.
Linda Cobert, is this something the school board is talking about in Orange County? What's your sense of what's going on here?
Absolutely. We've been having extensive conversations about this and trying to take a proactive approach in how we can reduce the number of arrests of children. In our schools currently, we have school resource officers, which are staffed by law enforcement, such as OPD and Orange County Sheriff's Department. And one of the things we have implemented is our own in-county district police force in Orange County Public Schools.
Is that something that other counties are doing too, or are you an outlier
yes,
here?
Yes, we did look around in the state of Florida and nationally to see what other counties are doing. And the idea behind having an in-house police force is the old-fashioned idea of community policing, where those officers really get to know the community. They know those children, and they know the difference between having a bad day and a serious offense. Currently, with an SRO, once the SRO steps into the situation, it is out of our hands, and it goes into the hands of the law enforcement officers. Mm-hmm. But by having our own district police, we believe we can have more of a culture of intervention and prevention and avoid a criminal record for especially our youngest children.
So Linda Cobert, who makes the call? Like, who decides this has gone beyond what a teacher can handle, we need to bring the resource officer in? Or does the resource officer, you know, how much flexibility do they have to say, I've got to step in and resolve the situation, I can't leave this to the school staff?
Well, it's handled on a case-by-case basis, and we mm-hmm. do have several levels of service within our schools. If an incident is starting in a classroom, a teacher may be able to call in a behavioral specialist, a guidance counselor, or a school resource officer, depending on what's going on. We're hoping with our own in-house district police force that we're able to avoid escalating some of those incidents with that old-fashioned community policing.
Mm-hmm. Calvin Soto, what are the reasons that school kids are getting arrested in Osceola County schools? What kind of things do they get taken to a resource officer for?
Well, just looking at the data from this year, there were arrests made for battery on employee. There was an arrest made for violation of probation, disorderly conduct, possession of weapon, aggravated assault, trespassing, possession of cannabis, grand theft, and 16 arrests amongst all of those. So if the arrests are happening, it's going to be most likely for a serious offense.
So these are kind of last resort things?
That's what we try to do. You know, our administration has been communicating with the principals, assistant principals, to help guide them in using their judgment and try to avoid arrest, or talking with the school resource officers and see if there is an alternative to arrest and issuing instead a civil citation.
And this communication between the schools and resource officers and the dialogue that you refer to, why now? Like, why is that happening now?
Well, this has been an ongoing issue. I believe that probably this is something that's always ongoing. Mm-hmm. I believe that the administration does not want to see arrest as the rule, but rather the exception. However, a lot of these things happen, and they happen at a school, in front of a teacher and a principal, that they have to make the call at that moment. And so we trust our principals and our instructional staff to have that judgment. Unfortunately, a lot of times what I see is that avoiding the judgment may be the easiest way out. And so that may lead to some issues and arrest that should not have happened. That's just the reality. That's just the reality of life.
Mm-hmm. Robert Wesley, what happens to these kids once they're arrested? Do they disappear into the system? Do you see them? What happens afterwards?
Well, let me step back. As was stated, once the school resource officer is contacted, the case is theirs. The problem is that police officers tell me every day, what other tool do I have?
Mm-hmm.
The only tool I have is the power to arrest. And that's the problem, that we're going right to the police officer, right to them to try and solve a problem. Why is Orange County the number one in the state in the number of juvenile arrests? Why does our circuit lead the state for 5 years running in the arrest of the youngest children? Are our kids worse than in other communities? I don't think so. When I first spoke to the Department of Juvenile Justice, the immediate response on the phone was, oh, yes, this is a Central Florida problem.
Mm-hmm.
These arrest rates do not occur in other parts of the state.
So why? Why is this happening?
My sincere belief is that law enforcement officers think that arresting children is therapeutic. We've got a broken idea that has been perpetuated that the good thing to do for a child is tough love, grab them up, scare them. But that's counterintuitive.
But that
doesn't work.
But Robert Wesley, is that from talking to police officers? Because you say it's a sincerely held belief of yours, but is that what police officers are telling you, that we're arresting kids because it's therapeutic?
No. When the state agency who collects this information, and I urge anyone who's following this and wants to see all the numbers in microscopic detail by police agency individually, to look at the DJJ website and all the information that they have. But their response is, this is a Central Florida phenomenon. Our kids aren't worse than other kids. Kids are kids. So it has to be in the arresting agency's ideas and use of discretion. So my great concern is that, yes, all the police officer will do is arrest, but they will choose that they won't take another course. And when mm-hmm. we have police officers in the school, this will be the outcome. It's no surprise. But the school-to-prison pipeline is predicated on three beliefs. First is that in No Child Left Behind or FCAT-type situations where the classroom teacher is evaluated based on testing success, he or she has a very strong incentive to get rid of troublemakers, get rid of slow learners, get rid of kids who are late to school or don't get breakfast or all the panoply of problems that kids have to get that kid out of school. And the way to get them out is to label them or say that they committed a crime and turn them over to a school resource officer. Then the second part is that schools have fallen in love with having police officers in the school when you bring in a police officer, the only tool available at her disposal as a police officer is the arrest. And the third is the shortage or the failure to staff behavioral specialists, guidance counselors, psychologists, and the people actually can take time with the child to say, what happened to you today? Who supports you? What happened at your house last night? All the things, every one of us listening to this had a wonderful teacher that showed particular concern for us at one time in our lives and bailed us out, put their arm around us or helped us to find a way or made things better for us. And the tension, the pressure on children is so great nowadays with the standardized testing. There's no time in the classroom to fix a kid. There's only time to get on the path and be a successful child and no room for the ones who get left behind because of a lot of things are no conditions that occur to them rather than things that they problems they cause for other people.
You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 News. I'm Matthew Petty. We're talking about the arrest rate for children in Orange and Osceola counties with public defender Robert Wesley, Orange County School Board member Linda Cobert, and Osceola County School Board member Calvin Soto. Linda Cobert, I want to come back to you. From what Robert Wesley is saying, how does that tally with your impression of what's going on with school resource officers, with the way Orange County is trying to tailor the program? I mean, is arrest the only recourse an officer has? Because it sounds like from what you're saying, you're looking at other ways to try and resolve situations.
That's right. I think that that's what we need to be looking at. I agree with Robert. Our SROs often go in that direction because they feel that that's the only tool that they have. But in our culture of intervention and prevention, one of the tools we would like to see utilized more is that of civil citation. Our district police officers will be using civil citations, and I understand that other law enforcement officers in other divisions will as well. What we can do with the civil citation after issuing it is look at other processes using community service, reparations, or even our new system of restorative justice. All of these are tools that can be used to decrease the number of arrests, particularly when it comes to nonviolent misdemeanors, because Mr. Wesley is correct. The resources of schools have been diminishing. We're still funded in public schools in the state of Florida at 2007 levels. So you imagine the resources school psychologists, behavioral specialists, guidance counselors are stretched to the limit. So I think we need to utilize these alternative tools like civil citations to avoid arrests for our young people.
Let me ask you this question too, Linda, the same thing I asked Calvin Soto. What happens to kids once they're arrested in the Orange County school system?
Once they are arrested by a law enforcement officer outside of Orange County Public Schools, it's out of our hands. It goes straight into the criminal justice system, and in Orange County Public Schools is no longer involved. We notify the parents, but it is then out of our hands.
But is it the same? I mean, you talk about the in-county school police force. Does that keep it within the school district bounds, or does it still go to the police issue?
It does. They will have the power of arrest, but we're hoping to avoid that more often and intervene and prevent it from going that far. Like I said, as a community police officer, you're more in touch with the needs of those students and working on decreasing those ramifications, like having a criminal record that will follow you throughout your life.
Mm-hmm. What are the parents telling you? Is this something that's been on parents' radars? Are they raising this issue as well?
You know what? The issue that parents have had mostly in our schools is safety. With some of the terribly violent crimes that have been committed in schools across the nation, like at Sandy Hook or Columbine, parents' number one concern is for their students' safety. And that's the direction that we want to go in, is being more concerned about student safety, campus safety, teacher safety, rather than arrest and punishment of students, that's not really the direction that we need to be going.
And on the issue of student safety, I guess a different conversation perhaps, but having a resource officer would be a pretty important part of that on the school campus.
Absolutely. And they are tasked with keeping our campus safe. But if we can find a way to decrease that lifelong ramification for a child and use intervention type tools as opposed to the tool only of arrest, that's the direction we need to be going.
Calvin Soto, what are parents in Osceola County telling you and telling the school board about the arrest rate? Is this something that's on their radar as an issue, a problem?
Not exactly, but there are concerns about school discipline, expulsions, and of course the arrests. I think parents see it all together. And absolutely, I have to agree with everything that Mr. Wesley stated previously, but I want to talk a little bit about the scared straight approach. Research has shown that does not work. And that's one of the main reasons why we still have a lot of arrests happening in school. Part of the motivation is, of course, that other students can see this is what happens when you misbehave. And the hope is that that individual, through the experience that he or she has through the criminal justice system, is able to correct his behavior, her behavior. But that's not what the research has shown. The outcome actually tends to be very, very negative. And thus, we have the rise of the school-to-prison pipeline. One of the things that I want to encourage in Osceola County with the parents is to partner with our schools and our teachers, not just to get involved with the instructional, with the academics, but also if there are behavioral issues, so that they can work together with our administration. If they don't have the tools, maybe we can intervene and help them. You know, if there's some kind of socialization that needs to happen to improve that process for their developing child.
What about funding? That's something that Linda Cobert brought up. That's key part of the puzzle there. You know, funding for psychologists, for other kinds of assistance you might need if you're having some trouble at school.
We are operating under 2007-2008 funding. That's absolutely true. That is just a fact. We could be creative. In Osceola County right now, we're going to be starting a project which is called Parents as Partners, and that's going to help teachers interact with parents for academic and and instructional purposes, but that can be expanded. The idea is basically to work together if we're going to find a student with an issue. But I just want to say something that's fundamental here, and that is that these behaviors from children are expected. Okay, children are going to misbehave, and they're going to misbehave in manner that, when you look at it by the letter of the law, will fit a criminal statute. That's just what's going to be. That cannot be eliminated. That is totally expected behavior. How we respond to that behavior, it's really important here. How school districts want to handle it, how the local communities want to handle it, and I believe that we absolutely want to involve the criminal justice system as the exception rather than the rule. And the way that it's being approached, at least for the past decade or so, with zero tolerance rules, are that there is a lot of discretion taken away and a lot of use because of the easy access to the SROs of the criminal justice system to resolve what normally would have been something resolved at the school and the parent level.
Mm-hmm. Also, this new law that's coming in, civil citations, do you see that having an impact?
Well, that's definitely a step forward. Mm-hmm. Because the criminal justice system, the research has shown that they're scared straight, it's not working. It's giving us a negative outcome. My concern is that I just don't know how different a civil citation is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And but it's definitely at least not a criminal record. It's not a criminal charge. I have to see how the impact of that interaction with the child on the child's learning and development in their self-confidence and their interactions with adults and schools. I don't know how that's going to work out. So definitely a step in the right place because of what we're doing right now. We'll have to see whether we have to continue to work and find solutions that will give us a positive outcome.
Robert Wesley, civil citations, you said yourself that this could be, you know, a way forward, an improvement at least. What kind of impact do you see this having on this issue?
This is a program to take the children out of the arrest cycle and make it into a rehabilitative process with the school, with the family, with the church to work it out. This is because between 75% and two-thirds of all kids in trouble in the juvenile justice system never reoffend. They don't come back. They're out of the process. These kids who have a strong enough family, a strong enough sense of responsibility, the tools to help them move forward are not going to be a problem. We're spending too much time, too much money, and too much attention on kids that are going to be fine.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of hurting kids, a lot of troubled kids who are at the break point in their lives where they need help now, and we should be focusing that energy, that effort, and that attention to those kids to save them now, not trying to accumulate a huge pool of children so that we can brag about the high arrest number or mourn the high arrest number.
Do you see the arrest number coming down? Do you get the sense that things are going to turn around here?
Well, I think that the first step is acknowledging you have a problem, just like they say in any self-help program. Look at what's happening, and then let's decide as a community how we want our criminal justice system to react to the problem that kids having trouble in school.
Robert Wesley is the public defender for Orange and Osceola counties. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
We're also joined by Calvin Soto. He's on the Osceola County School Board. Calvin, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Linda Cobert joining us by phone. She's with the Orange County School Board. Linda, thank you so much.
Thank you, Matthew.
You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 News. I'm Matthew Petty. When we come back, the Florida Standards Assessment Test was rolled out for the first time this year. But there were problems with its rollout, and that led to questions from teachers and parents. Orange County School Superintendent Barbara Jenkins says some problems are expected with any new test, but she expects improvements the next time the test is administered. Intersection returns in a minute. Welcome back to Intersection on 90.7 News. I'm Matthew Petty. The Florida Standards Assessment, or FSA, test was designed to replace the FCAT, the Florida Comprehensive Assessment Test. The test is for students from third grade through high school. But the rollout of the new test this year was anything but smooth. There were delays caused by computer server problems, teachers and parents protested the new test, and a review of how it went came back with mixed results. The test was valid, but its implementation was problematic. Well, Orange County is one of the biggest school districts in the state, and to find out how testing went there, we're joined by Superintendent Barbara Jenkins. Superintendent Jenkins, thanks for joining me.
Happy to be here.
What were some of the problems that you saw with the rollout of this new test?
So in most of our schools, Matthew, we had some technology glitches. If you recall, the first couple of days of the rollout of the writing test in particular, the system had issues. And I want to be very clear, we worked judiciously to make sure we had our technology prepared here in Orange County and that our students would be ready to go online. There were glitches with the state system almost countywide throughout Orange County Public Schools. And then sporadically from there on out, we had some issues off and on with individual schools.
And Orange County wasn't the only school district which was experiencing some issues there. As you say, it was kind of a statewide thing.
Absolutely. It was pretty tremendous issues statewide.
Is this what happens every time you debut a new test? I mean, I'm wondering how much of this can be put down to teething issues with rolling out an initiative this big.
You know what? That's an important point, Matthew, because we like for the general public to understand when you roll out or implement a new assessment system, a new test, they are expected to have some difficulties. And quite frankly, that is why we really advocated for this initial year being a baseline year because of those anticipated difficulties.
What does that mean, baseline year?
So we were interested in the state avoiding any actual issuance of school grades or any impact on teacher evaluations for the initial year, but rather to consider it a baseline year from which we would show growth in years to come.
Mm-hmm. And was that something that the state was on board with? Because I know there was some talk about that after this review came out, but was that something that the state said from the get-go, yep, this is a test year, so to speak?
So I think it's important to sort of differentiate between what the state, we believe the state has said, and what we were hoping for. The state has said this initial year there will be no punitive consequences for schools and school districts. In other words, different consequences that would be in place for schools who had a school grade issued D and F level, that there would be no punitive consequences this year. We maintain that if grades are issued, whether the state actually administers negative or punitive consequences or not, we are labeling schools and the general public still will change their impression about those schools based on what we believe would be limited data.
Mm-hmm. So just remind us, Superintendent Barbara Jenkins, what's the purpose of this test? Is it for grading students, for schools and teachers, or all three of those?
I'd say all three. Here's the thing, Matthew. If you have a teacher evaluation system that is supposed to include student growth measures, then clearly your assessment system, your testing system, is connected to your teacher evaluation system. And in the state of Florida, by statute, grades are to be assigned to schools based on student achievement data as well. And so the last level of impact is for the individual students. That's sort of been set aside this year, but third graders scoring at a certain level for reading would be prohibited statutorily from being promoted unless they met other measures put in place. And, of course, our high school students would have had to pass the 10th grade reading exam in order to graduate from high school.
Mm-hmm. And the review of the test that came back is basically sound but shouldn't be relied on to make critical decisions about students. And you mentioned third graders being held back. I mean, that would be a big deal for a third grader, keeping them back a grade.
That's correct. And the state clearly said, and we certainly took advantage of that, the state clearly said, you can use some of that information. We don't have all the information to give to you, but we're willing to give you at least some indication of your lowest performing students, and then the local districts could decide whether or not they were going to use that. Here in Orange County, we used other methods to consider for third grade promotion instead.
Mm-hmm.
Subsequent years, we will be back to looking at the new test for required retention unless you meet other requirements and other stipulations to be promoted to fourth grade. And the same thing is true, Matthew. For our high school students, we certainly did not have anyone prevented from graduating based on any taking of the FSA, the new test for 10th grade.
You know, when you talk about the test being valid on some levels, but in other respects, like, you know, making those critical decisions about students, whether they can progress or not, I mean, that's a pretty critical, a key part of this test. So I guess the question is, if it can't be gotten right for that, why have that test, right? I mean, they must have to retool it, you would think, to make sure that actually works the next time around.
That's an assumption that we're making, and certainly it was part of the recommendations as well. And Matthew, it's important to understand, first time administration of a brand new assessment, we would expect that there will need to be some adjustments and some improvements made over time. Mm-hmm. And so while we need an assessment that mirrors our new standards, that assessment, that process needs to be improved on the second and third administration, which again we think makes pretty good sense for why we would prefer not to see a lot of credence being placed on how schools have performed this first time around.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you about a neighboring county. Seminole County is asking for what they're calling the Sunshine Solution, replace the test with something else altogether. What's Orange County's position?
So our position is that other national norm reference tests are certainly highly regarded and highly respected. We make extensive use of the SAT, for example. What we don't believe is that it was designed for the purposes that the state of Florida wants to use it for. And so there's some mechanical technicalities in a norm reference test that we think would be problematic for a one-to-one match to the new Florida standards. So if we've been concerned that the new FSA be aligned, then I think we would have the same concern about alignment of a norm reference test. Secondly, we think it would be problematic in how you are going to administer teacher performance measures based on that one exam. How will you cut up or cut in pieces student performance to match them to individual teachers? We think that's problematic. And in some states where they are using it, using norm reference tests, we've determined, or at least seen in some instances, it's not a critical measure that says whether or not a student gets to graduate from high school. Mm-hmm.
So essentially, Superintendent Jenkins, sounds like what you're saying is if you replaced it with another test altogether, you might end up having some of the same problems that you're experiencing now with the FSA.
That's my belief. And I want to be very clear, we think there's a different means or a different purpose behind the two tests. We think we see test really moving more towards making sure our students are prepared and grow along a continuum to get into college, to have to further their educational careers, as opposed to a test that is a cutoff, a yes or no answer on whether or not a student can graduate. We see a very clear difference between those two. And I will tell you, if you look at the state performance on a particular nationally normed exam, I don't know that every district would be extremely pleased with those outcomes as a measure of which students get to graduate from high school.
Mm-hmm. Now, Opt Out Orlando has been pretty vocal in their opposition to high-stakes testing. Can you find some kind of middle ground with a group like Opt Out?
I think in the state of Florida, by statute, we are held to certain requirements for testing. Constitutional officers, meaning school board members, as well as superintendents, are required to uphold what is currently the law in the state. And so if there are efforts to actively stand against what is required in statute, we certainly respect those desires. I can't support purposefully working against or moving against what is currently in statute. So I think that advocacy has to be directed toward what is currently in our statutes for student achievement. I will also say I'm hard-pressed to think that testing and accountability is going to go away, not just in Florida, but nationally. And so we've got to come to some balance around what is rational. Here in Orange County, we cut out extensively any benchmark test, lots of benchmark testing and formative assessments, and move more toward dealing with those cumulative or end-of-year assessments that are required to meet data that we need both for student achievement and for teacher evaluation. Mm-hmm. And I want to be clear, too, we are not opposed to the notion that if you have new standards, if you have any standards, that is, guidelines on what children should know and be able to do, that you have to have accountability to measure whether or not we did what we were supposed to do for those students. Public education for a return on investment indicator has to be willing to measure whether or not we are actually getting students to the point to know and be able to do what those standards put in place. So the measurement, in my opinion, is not an issue. How well we can do that and how efficiently we can do that without disrupting significantly our educational time is what is most critical. And so that might be the happy median. I shouldn't say happy median. That might be a reasonable compromise that we back down significantly on the time invested. But I think we have to be reasonable. The notion of accountability and indicating, proving to parents and to the general public whether or not we have actually taught children what we said they should know and be able to do, that whole notion is not going to go away. I think it's going to become pretty standard practice across the nation that won't be done away with anytime soon. And in fact, the majority of our parents understand that need to measure and want to know how well their children are doing.
So is that, Barbara Jenkins, is that what you tell parents who say, I'm terrified of this testing and what it's doing to my kid, I'm going to pull them out of these tests?
You know, what I would say to parents is if a child spends a year in a classroom, in public education, in private education, in a public charter school, in any place, I would say every parent should want some indication of whether or not they measure up, what they received and what they have learned measures up to what was to be expected. And to set that aside or not want that indication is probably just putting off the inevitable, because sooner or later our young adults, our children in high school and beyond, have to face some type of assessment, some type of measurement. Because it's just a way of life. We can't get away from it. And so I would encourage parents to see it as a means of both informing the teacher so they can better provide the education that their students need, but also informing the parents. How good of a job have we done as a public school entity in educating your child? Sort of a quality assurance or I believe a return on investment indicator to parents. The issue is making sure those measurements are valid and realistic and timely.
Barbara Jenkins is the superintendent of Orange County Public Schools. Thank you so much for joining us.
Always a pleasure, Matthew.
You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 News. I'm Matthew Petty. When we return, Cindy Hamilton from Opt Out Orlando explains why some parents want to see an end to high-stakes testing. Intersection returns in a minute. Welcome back to Intersection on 90.7 News. I'm Matthew Petty. While the state presses ahead with the Florida Standards Assessment Test, there's a group of parents from across Florida who say schools rely too heavily on testing. Opt Out Orlando says test scores are sometimes used to keep children back a grade or put them in remedial classes, even when those scores don't really show how well the child is doing academically. Parents in the Opt Out movement have their children show up for the test, but they don't answer any of the questions. It's an act of civil disobedience which they say gives parents more control over their child's education. Well, joining us now to talk about the opposition to the FSA and high-stakes testing in general, Cindy Hamilton from Opt Out Orlando. Cindy, thank you very much for coming in.
I am so happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, Opt Out isn't just an Orlando movement. How did it start? And is Orlando asking for the same kinds of things as the other groups around the state?
Well, in the state of Florida, we just launched on Wednesday the Opt Out Florida Network. And this is a way for our Opt Out groups that are located at the district level to be recognized as a force to be reckoned with. And we have about 40 opt-out groups across the state. It all started with Opt Out Orlando here in Florida. About 3 years ago, we opened a Facebook group up to service the needs of Orange County residents. And, of course, that spread across the state.
What are you asking for?
Well, what we're asking for, what we do, I think you have to understand a little bit about that first, is that through an act of civil disobedience known as Opt Out, we are protesting what is happening to public education today. And what we are asking for is to reclaim public ed, to return classroom time, to return autonomy to teachers, and for authentic assessment that informs instruction and does not have punitive consequences.
So is to say you're anti-testing, is that reducing it too far? Is that accurate or inaccurate?
We're not anti-testing at all. What mm-hmm. we would like is to have authentic assessment that informs instruction and does not have all the high stakes attached to it. As soon as you remove the high stakes, you take away the cutthroat way that education happens today. And when I say high stakes, I mean things like retention of students, remediation, denial of a diploma, VAM scores, which is the way they evaluate teachers, teachers' performance, pay, school grades. All of those things completely change the dynamic of a classroom.
How do you evaluate those things if you don't do it through a test?
Ask a professional teacher.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying the teachers are not being given enough input into the process?
Right now, teachers are so micromanaged that they're too busy fulfilling the data collection needs of the districts in the state to actually spend much time doing real teaching. And they, because of all of the pressure that is put on our public schools to produce excellent test scores for that school grade, excellent test scores for that teacher evaluation, very little in about our accountability system really has anything to do with our students. If we're only going to test to evaluate the growth and gains of students, we don't have an issue with that. It's all of the other things that they tag on to this test.
Mm-hmm. So, Cindy Hamilton, what are your thoughts on the Florida Standards Assessment? Is this a good test?
Well, right now we are in the middle of looking at the validity study that Alpine did for the state of Florida as directed by our Florida legislators. And it's been all over the news recently that there is great disdain for the study itself, as well as a lot of questions still being unanswered. So again, the test itself, we don't know what we think of it because we can never see it, quite frankly. However,
what do you mean by you can never see it?
The public can never see the test questions.
Mm-hmm.
We, in fact, the students, when they sit to take the test, have to sign an agreement that they will not discuss the test questions with anyone. Anyone meaning their parents or anyone. So we can never see the questions. We assume we have to trust the Florida Department of Education that they have picked a test that is actually evaluating our standards, but we don't know that for sure.
Education Commissioner Pam Stewart said last week that test opponents had misinterpreted some of the findings of the review of the FSA. Who's right here, Cindy Hamilton? Where does the truth lie?
A lot of people are saying that people are not understanding the validity study. And I think that what she was addressing there was the percentage of questions that did and did not directly relate to our standards. And if you watch the legislators' committee hearings on education this last week, you will notice that there's a lot of questions from people like Senator Montford, Senator Legg, Senator Ring. They questioned the gentleman from Alpine who did the study, and they weren't getting a lot of clear answers. So people want this to be very cut and dry. They want to be told, okay, yes, the test is valid.
Mm-hmm.
The problems that we're seeing with the validity study is that all of the test items were not included. The order from the legislator and part of the law was that they evaluate all FSA testing, meaning everything that was new this year. And that included Algebra 1, 2, and Geometry. What we've noticed in the study is that Algebra 2 and Geometry were completely left out, as well as English Language Arts and Math for several grades. And so when she says we misunderstand it, she's not explaining it so the public can understand it either. So somebody needs to explain it.
Seminole County said it wants to replace the FSA with something else. Orange County's taking a more moderate approach. Would you be happy with a Seminole County-style solution?
The opt-out movement in Florida does not support the Sunshine Solution, which is what the Seminole County solution has mm-hmm. has become. And again, the reason is that it's like replacing a broken leg with a broken arm. You're replacing one bad test with another bad test. And what they're proposing is to use the SAT. Everybody's like, oh, well, we've used the SAT for years. That's a great idea. The problem is the SAT is a college readiness test. It is not a test that's going to measure the gaps and gains.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to be careful about that. And it also does not remove any of the high stakes that are going to be attached to the test.
What do you tell parents who say they're not happy with the test, but they're worried about the fallout if they withdraw their kids from testing?
Well, they have to understand, first of all, if they're going to come to the opt-out movement, they have to really, our number one rule is know your conviction. Because people come to us because their children are great students, but they don't do well on tests. They come to us because they object to the corporate takeover of public education. They come to us because they resent federal intrusion on local decisions. They come for all kinds of reasons. So the Florida statute states very clearly that all school districts must administer the test, whatever the test name is in the statute at the time, and that all students must participate. Our students, when they choose to opt out, do participate. They actually sit for the tests. They break the seal or log in, depending on which kind of test they're taking, and they don't answer questions. Answering questions is not mandated by statute anywhere. And if you ask the Department of Ed, is answering questions mandated? They will say no. And so what that generates is an NR2 code on the test or a score of non-attemptiveness. It records your student participated. They fulfilled their portion of the law, but they're not generating a test score that can hurt them, that can hurt their teacher, that can hurt their school or their school district. But the bigger picture here is that this is an act of civil disobedience to protest the takeover of public education. We want our classrooms back.
Mm-hmm. Is there middle ground, do you think, with Orange County Public Schools? We talked to Superintendent Barbara Jenkins. She said there's always going to be some form of testing, but maybe there's a way to find some testing that you know, parents can be happy with.
What we, again, and I'm going to keep harping on it, until the stakes are removed from the testing, there is no middle ground. We are an activist movement across the state of Florida. And we're going to be here this next school year opting out of testing. And we watch our school board, we watch our legislators all talk about how they're going to remove some testing. But nobody is talking about removing the stakes. And the conversation has to change. Mm-hmm. There is no middle ground there.
So you said you're gaining some traction amongst parents across the state and in Central Florida as far as people are interested in opt-out movement?
Yeah, every time Pam Stewart says the word opt-out, or every time something like Lee County deciding not to deliver the test last year, our membership goes sky high. And I really believe also that once this validity study and the cut scores are set and we know how many students really failed the new FSA, I think the interest in the opt-out movement will rise again.
Do you have a sense of what proportion of students or you know, parents of students in Orange County are part of the movement?
Well, we know that we have I'd have to look at our Facebook page right now. We have about 3,600 people in the opt-out Orlando group, but we are a statewide network at this point, mm-hmm. and it changes on a daily basis.
So what's next for Opt-Out Orlando?
Really what we're going to be focusing on over the next year is creating education voters, people who are aware of how the person that represents them in Tallahassee feels about education. A lot, what we did, in fact, we just did this yesterday, we watched the Florida Channel and we watched whatever Senate or House Education Committee meeting is showing, and we commentate through the whole thing. It creates an awareness in the public and parents as to how that person, you know, they saw the commercial last year. They had no idea how they felt about education. So I think our focus this year is going to be strongly into the area of creating education voters.
We've been speaking to Cindy Hamilton. She's with Opt Out Orlando. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Support for Intersection comes from our listeners and from Florida Hospital. Intersection's producer is Brendan Byrne. The executive producer is Catherine Welch. Tune in Friday morning at 9 for the weekly news roundtable. We'll be taking your calls. I'm Matthew Petty. Thanks for listening.